Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Murder. Ba-ba-da-ba. Welcome to Death Do Us Part podcast, hosted by my wife, Jamie.
Hello.
And myself, Mark. What up, y'all?
Hey.
Hey. So, I just had a burger from Speedway.
Dude, they're delicious, aren't they?
Hands down, better than McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King.
No.
What is going on? That is a hidden gem.
Well, so McDonald's is like super fucking salty.
Yeah.
Like too salty.
Yeah.
Burger King
and
is
they're
always
small.
Burn.
See, I like the charcoal.
I don't. No.
Yeah,
no.
I like Burger King.
I don't like steak, for example.
Yeah.
Knock the fucking horns off and slap that fucking cow on my plate. That's how I want to eat it. I don't want burned anything on my meat.
Yeah.
Blech. No.
Blech.
So, I mean, when I asked
and
for
Wendy's
like,
is good.
The last time I went for steak, I went to Texas Roadhouse, obviously.
Yeah.
And she's like, how do you want that? And I said, rare. And she's like, are you sure? I said,
yeah.
Rare.
Yeah. I want blood dripping.
That motherfucker better bleed when I cut it open.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I don't want some fucking pussy well done bullshit.
No, and people think like that's nuts wanting it bloody. Like,
oh,
that's
so
the
good.
Tastiest.
That's how my dad taught me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, you have to eat a steak like that. If it's like that, you don't need any sauce.
Oh, that is delicious.
What are you drinking?
It's a Bud Light Platinum Seltzer, actually.
Ooh. You got me my beat boxes,
yeah,
which are phenomenal.
No, Bud Light made a seltzer. It does.
Yeah.
It's very tasty. It does not taste
How did
like,
I know that and you didn't?
I don't know, but normally like seltzers you kind of get used to them, but they taste like say you're drinking a peach one. It's like you're drinking white TV static and someone throws a peach at your head.
I'm not into the seltzers.
That sounds pretty good.
I just can't get into the seltzers. It tastes like watered or like flat pop.
No, try that one. It's good.
Okay.
It doesn't taste like a seltzer.
It just burned my throat. Yeah, it is.
You're a fucking idiot.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it is a seltzer. Oh.
Whatever.
Are you going to be on your phone the whole time? Or?
I'm sorry, like you?
Am I on my phone?
Currently?
Am I?
You will be in about four fucking seconds. And
you
I have
what?
To, like, poke you to be like, hi, are you paying attention?
All right. You know what? I'm going to say a joke because I need to put you in a good mood. Are you ready for this?
No.
How do you know if women are wearing pantyhose?
Should I just tell you right now that I'm way overstimulated, undercaffeinated, and have no medication on board?
Oh, boy.
Just an FYI.
That's not good.
No.
I'll have to tell you to slow down. And
yeah, just an FYI.
Yeah.
So this joke better be fucking stellar.
Oh, it will be. How do you know if women are wearing pantyhose?
How?
If they fart, their ankles swell.
Jesus fucking Christ. Somewhere in the universe, my father is laughing just as hard as you are.
I know he is.
Yeah.
I know he is.
Wow.
Oh, God, I had to get that out.
Oh, God.
Don't you feel so much better now?
I fucking hate you. No.
You...
I don't feel better in any way, shape, or form.
Babe, that's... Come on now. So what else is hanging?
the picture of your balls that I just sent to the doctor? That?
So the people know, like, it just wasn't a random picture of my balls. I have a cyst on my groin.
It's not your groin, it's your butt cheek.
It's my groin.
Your groin is the front. If it was your groin, it is not. If it was your groin, I would be taking a picture of the front of you, not you bent over the chair.
True.
It is on your butt cheek.
True. But
it is not your groin. I don't. Do you know anatomy?
No.
Clearly.
No, not at all.
Not even
your
groin.
But the doctor said it was the groin, so. That's what the other doctor told him it was.
It's literally less than a half an inch away from your fucking butthole. That is not your groin.
But so people understand, the new surgeon that I've been referred to.
Can I give him the short version?
Yeah.
Okay. So he has this reoccurring cyst close to his butthole, not his groin. So we finally were like, he's got to go see a surgeon to get the fucking core taken out. So he ends up going to the primary care. She's like, yeah, you got to go see a fucking surgeon.
Slow down a little bit.
So he ends up seeing one surgeon. He has to go to another one because of hospital issues. So this doctor did a virtual call, essentially, because this is something that we need to get taken care of because, you know, your butthole's not a very clean area, no matter how much you dial it up. So the doctor wanted a picture because it was recently inflamed and was treated, so we were hoping it was still kind of open to take the picture, but the doctor wanted a picture of it.
So. And on a business line, which cracks me up, he's like, oh, it's the office line, but I still get it as a text.
And then just send a text message back to you saying, can I add this to your chart? Yeah. Well,
it's
they're my balls.
It's a picture of my balls hanging.
And me holding a quarter. Next to your butthole, essentially.
Oh, my God. What is going on?
This is why I decided to...
I hope he, thought, hey, that's a great set of balls. Like, that's what my train of thought is thinking.
No.
That's a big cyst. But you know what? This guy has a great pair of balls.
I assure you that not a single solitary fucking person listening right now is wondering why I decided to drink tonight. Just saying.
Yeah, so I appreciate it. I had to fucking hike my leg up and spread my cheeks and my sack hanging. It's like, and you taking a picture.
It's been a twice a day thing the whole time it's been there. So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So today was the perfect day.
Yeah, it's a day to have a drink.
Yeah, my Adderall's not in stock.
Again?
Yeah, so.
Oh, dude, what is going on with it?
I don't know, but I...
Why does it keep, why is it so fucking hard to get?
I don't fucking know.
You would have an easier time getting it off the street.
I would have an easier time getting cocaine at this point. Because, so they have 10 milligrams available.
Yeah.
But because I take so much daily, no pharmacy is going to hand me a bottle of 240 fucking Adderall pills.
But why doesn't the doctor write it for it, though?
It doesn't matter. Nobody's going to give me 240 Adderall pills. First of all, the amount that I take exceeds the daily recommended dose, so insurance doesn't cover it to begin with.
Okay.
So I have to pay for it through GoodRx. Awesome. Okay.
Does that help?
Oh, yeah. It's like $50.
Okay.
GoodRx won't even allow me to put in 240 Adderall pills.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Because if I were to put it through the insurance, they would give me... 90 pills instead of the 120 that I need.
Yeah.
And I would have to forfeit those extra 30. That's why I have to pay for it out of pocket.
Fuck that.
Because the daily recommended dose is 60. So the insurance will only pay for the 60.
Oh.
And then the rest of it, it's not like I can split it between the insurance and GoodRx. So it's either I do it all through GoodRx.
One or the other.
Well, I can't. GoodRx won't even allow me to put in 240 fucking Adderall pills, probably because I could pay a mortgage with it.
Oh, but my God.
This is why I'm drinking.
I'm sorry. Yeah, drink up. You need it.
It's been, the worst part is, and anybody who has ADHD knows this, you know you're being a fucking spaz and you can't help it.
Right.
Like, you interrupt people and you talk too fast and you get excited and you get distracted by fucking purple sparkly crayons. And as you're doing it, you're realizing you're doing it and you're like, Jesus.
But you can't control it.
But you can't stop it.
Yeah. I get it. I get it.
Bring on the 8% alcohol, Bud Light.
No, I mean, when I take some of my medication, when I don't take it, like, I know, like I can't control my actions.
I hate it.
I know I'm doing something, yeah. And I can't control it.
That's why
I totally get
when
it.
When I get like that, like, I will avoid people.
Yeah.
I avoid talking to people because I know I'm embarrassed by it.
No, you shouldn't be embarrassed.
Which is so funny, because I went 40 years being a fucking spaz.
Yeah.
You know, and now, yeah.
No, I get it. I'm embarrassed with everything that's wrong with me, and I shouldn't.
It's
it is what it is.
And you can tell when I take it, because
there's a difference.
I'm all over the fucking place. Yeah. And then it kicks in, and it's like, I'm in. Like, yeah. I'm done. So.
No, I could tell right when you got home. I mean, you were doing 20 different things. I'm like, right. Babe, we got to fucking record.
That's why the case took a little bit, because it's been about a week.
Oh, I gotcha.
So, yeah, I apologize for my...
Yeah, it's been about 2 weeks, so...
Has it really?
Yeah, it has. It
fuck my life.
I'm looks
sorry,
like
guys.
April 28th or something. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So it's been a good 2 weeks.
Fuck. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Blame the pharmaceutical companies.
Big Pharma, fuck you.
I know, I'm telling you.
Fuck you. Well, I'm going to have a sip of my beatbox.
This one's kind of long.
These are delicious.
So.
Dude, this case is fucked beyond belief,
yeah.
But so good. I'm so ready to hear it.
Do I have to give a trigger warning?
Yeah. This one is disturbing.
It is disturbing. The crime itself is disturbing. But the aftermath is even worse.
Have you come across any podcasts that have done this case?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's a pretty well-known case.
I had no clue. When you told me about it, I had no clue. But I looked it up and holy fuck is it interesting.
I will, and I know you kind of frown upon this, but Sword and Scale did an episode on it.
Yeah.
And had interviews with his mom.
Oh, wow.
So it was a great episode.
Yeah.
I don't think the interviews were with him specifically, but I think it was just a lot of footage that it was right after it happened, so it was easier to get kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if other people have noticed, but after the end result, which I won't give out, Canada locked a lot of records and sources and news outlets.
Oh, they sealed a lot of shit, huh?
They sealed a lot of stuff. And they don't really call it sealed.
Right.
They really just made it kind of disappear. Because this became a huge
controversy
in Canada.
Yeah.
So.
It is totally fucked.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. So.
So why don't you explain?
Okay, we are doing the murder of Timothy McLean. And the murderer was Vince Lee.
Right.
Vince, he's got a longer name.
Where did it happen in Canada?
In Manitoba.
Okay.
So, I get confused by Canadian territories.
I do too. Yeah, so I do too. Sorry, Canadians.
I apologize. They're provinces. I know that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They
so,
are.
So, I know, so like, I don't know if it's like a state within a province, within a country in Canada. I don't know how it is. So there's usually three names.
Yeah.
So I apologize if I fuck it up. but it was close to Winnipeg.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
And Saskatchewan, which I just like to say.
Yeah.
So it's a cool word.
It is. Saskatchewan. Sorry,
well,
people
if you don't
who
say it like
there.
A dipshit.
Yeah. Please don't say it like that.
Yeah.
You guys hate me now. I'm sorry.
All right. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, so I may have to turn my phone on.
Yeah, it's kind of dark in here.
Our thing isn't on, that's why.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, our banner isn't on.
Yeah.
Oh, we weren't thinking today.
I got a...
Son of a biscuit.
All right.
Oh, okay. That light is bright.
So, just west of Portage La Prairie, Manitoba.
No computer either, huh?
No.
Wow, yeah. Look at you.
I got a little bit on my phone, but no.
Look at you, babe. Damn. How many pages? A lot.
Yeah. Well, I left a notebook and had to start a new one.
Oh, God. Here we go.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
What color ink?
Black.
Oh.
One page.
What no, with I, traditional black,
I
huh?
did, because I can't see shit.
I gotcha.
I had a page in pencil, and I rewrote it, because I'm like, oh, I'm not going to read
no,
this.
No. That, no way.
Yeah. So, under a tree on the roadside is a white cross with Timothy Richard McLean, 1985 to 2008, painted across it. His dad wrote, quote, "I think of you always, son. Love, Dad." Next to the cross is Tim's sunglasses and a work shirt. This is where Tim McLean was tragically and brutally murdered on July 30th, 2008. Greyhound Bus 1170 was traveling from Edmonton to Winnipeg on the Trans-Canadian Highway, and without provocation, Vince Lee attacked Tim McLean while he slept. I would just like to point out to everybody listening that you are on your phone.
I am. I'm texting little man, though.
You just yelled at me about being on the phone.
I know. I'm sorry. Whatever. But he apologized for texting like 20 times.
excuse me. Tim's mom would go on to say, quote, "Nothing changed for everybody else. The traffic still went, the sun still shone, and it was so maddening to me that the whole world didn't stop. Mine did. It stopped, and it took a long time to really want to get up every day." His father would say, quote, "I don't think we'll ever be over it," and then tattooed a picture of Tim's face over his heart. The event not only traumatized the family, but also witnesses, other passengers, and responding law enforcement. But the overall outcome is almost as shocking as the murder itself.
Ooh, enticing.
Dun, dun, dun. So what I did notice was, did you see the pictures of Vince Lee?
Yeah, I did.
One of our football dads is like his doppelganger.
Oh.
You know, as I said it, you know exactly who I'm fucking talking about.
Oh, we got to keep that on the low. Yeah.
It's his fucking doppelganger.
It is.
Isn't that fucked up?
That, yeah. Holy shit, is that crazy.
So, Timothy Richard McLean Jr. was born on October 3rd, 1985 in Winnipeg, Manitoba. His parents were Tim McLean Sr. and Carol Daydele. He did have a younger brother by the name of Kendall. He did grow up in Winnipeg and another smaller town in Manitoba. He was described by his brother as a short man who was larger than life, who worked out so much it looked like he was chipped from stone. He was unapologetically
Greek
himself,
goddess.
Charismatic, and demanded the presence of a room with his strong magnetic personality. Tim would end up dropping out of high school, but said that he was smarter than the average bear and, quote, had more friends than he could shake a stick at.
Who says that? I'm smarter than the average bear.
That's like what he said, verbatim.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So Tim was a modern day nomad, preferring to, quote, let the wind blow him around to new people and new places. With the exception of little Timmy, his pet iguana, Tim wasn't much for owning things, choosing instead to give away what he could.
Do you remember our little iguana?
He was a bearded dragon.
Oh, yeah.
And his name was Larry.
Yeah, Larry, that's right.
And I almost bought one the other day when I went to Petco.
And he died when I was in the hospital, right?
Yeah, I almost bought another one the other day. Well,
that'd be cool.
Okay, to be perfectly honest with you, I almost bought two because one was laying on top of the other one while he was sleeping. And I'm like, well, clearly I can't fucking separate them.
Exactly.
The one would side-eye me and then together. Just go back to sleep and then side-eye me again. And I was like, oh, little man, I'll take you both.
Where'd you see him at?
I was doing an order out of Petco.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was like, oh.
Maybe we should get another one.
Take you guys home.
Yeah. Could you get another
one? No.
Why not?
I don't want to take care of something else that is breathing.
I'll take care of
it. No, you will not.
Yeah, babe.
Okay.
A bearded dragon I can take care of.
Oh. How are you going to feed it?
By putting in flakes?
What do they eat?
Flakes?
No.
Do you remember crickets?
What made you scream like a bitch in the
shower? Oh, God, crickets. Yeah, fuck that.
Yeah.
Yeah, forget that.
Crickets that are bred to not make noise so you can't find them?
Yeah, fuck that.
Thank you. Done.
Mm-hmm.
So in the summer of 2008, a perfect opportunity presented itself to Tim. A childhood friend called to ask what Tim's upcoming plans were. Tim, 22, at this point, had nothing planned, obviously. And she's like, well, pack your shit for like a week. Meet up with me. We got this potential job.
Ooh.
Turns out it was at a carnival.
Yeah, carnies.
So in Canada, they call them carnival burkers. Here in the U.S., what? We call them carnies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're carnies.
So it started out in Edmonton. Now, the friend said, like I said, to just plan for a week, but it ended up turning into, like, the entire summer. Tim absolutely loved it. This was his, like, thing. This is what he wanted to do. He was traveling and meeting new people and didn't have to stay in one place, and it was great for him. It turned into a pretty tight-knit group. Prior to leaving, though, Tim had reunited with a former girlfriend by the name of Colleen. They had previously dated, but then separated. Colleen had since gotten married and had two kids and had recently gotten divorced, and him and her and Tim had reconciled. Mm. Well, he also knocked her up before he left.
Oh, hey.
So she was about 4-ish months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly. Yeah, maybe if I can count. So while Tim was traveling with the carnival, him and Colleen decided that they were going to move to British Columbia. Tim's like, I guess if I'm having a baby. Like,
yeah, might as well.
Got to keep him with little Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Timmy!
Now, the carnival was scheduled to go on to Regina, like late July, end of July. So Tim decided that instead of going to Regina, he was going to go home to Winnipeg to start planning for the move. Friends offered to buy Tim a plane ticket, but he was like, no, I'll take the bus.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Tim said, I'm just going to take the Greyhound. Like, no plane ticket. It was a 24-hour-ish bus ride. That's why his friends were like, please let me buy you a plane ticket.
Yeah.
He's like, no, like, don't spend the fucking money.
Damn.
I'd be like, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
I'll fly
come
out
again.
Of Midway.
Right?
Thank you.
Yeah, fuck yeah. You ain't kidding.
So, a little after midnight on July 30th, 2008, Tim boarded bus number 1170 with 35 other passengers. He put on his headphones, found a seat in the back of the bus, right? It was like a row in front of the toilet.
Yeah.
And started the journey. The bus would be traveling on the Yellowhead Highway, which was a stretch of the Trans-Canada Highway, through Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan.
I had to.
Take a puff.
At around 6:55 p.m., at a scheduled stop in Erickson, Manitoba, a new passenger, Vince Lee, got on.
Ooh.
A little bit about Vince Lee.
Yeah.
Vincent Weigong Lee.
Weigong?
Yep, that's what we're going with.
That's awesome.
Was born April 30th, 1968 in Dandong, Liaoning, China.
Hmm.
It's my story and I'm sticking to it.
All right.
He was the second of three children. His father was a custodian and his mother was a math teacher.
Janitor, if you want to be a dick about it.
Yeah, that's why I said custodian.
Right.
He was born about a month premature, and back then, that was a big to-do. I was also premature. Jackson, we just talked about this, was super fucking premature. Now yeah. He's 27.
Yep.
Vince had a pretty sickly childhood and exhibited significant developmental delays to the point of not walking or talking until the age of 5.
Oh, wow.
And not starting elementary school until the age of 9.
Oh, my God.
He quickly caught up, though, by high school. Yeah. There were significant health and academic improvements by high school. And in 1992, he graduated from Wuhan Institute of Technology.
Wuhan.
Wuhan, with a bachelor's in computing. So computing. Computers. Yeah. From 1994 to 1998, he worked as a computer software engineer in Beijing. And in June of 1995, he married his wife, Anna. Now, at that time, the family, including Anna, said that they saw no signs of anything that would resemble mental illness or anger issues or trouble, so to speak.
Okay.
His father described him as stubborn and restless and had a tendency for, quote, always moving around, but didn't think anything, you know, of it. So on June 11th of 2001, he immigrated to Canada. He immigrated as part of the Federal Skilled Worker Program. So that's how, I don't want to say how they recruit citizens, but that's how citizens are allowed to come into Canada as adults. They have to go through this worker program. So you basically have to present yourself to the country and be like, yes, I can work.
No kids.
So, because I tried to Google it, and it like brought up the application process, and I was like,
"Oh, did it really?
That's not what I want."
Whoops!
Not what I'm looking for.
Whoops.
So he moved to Winnipeg. One source, and only one source, said that he went to school in Canada for computer programming until 2002, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Most of the schooling was in China. So when he came here. Or to Canada, excuse me. Unfortunately, he had the same kind of issue that a lot of immigrants tend to have when they get here. Mm-hmm. Their schooling isn't recognized in either, you know, Canada or the U.S. So, like, you see it all the time, mostly with engineering, I've noticed. India, you know, China, Japan, they get engineering degrees, like high master's engineering degrees, and come here, and they can't even wipe their ass with it.
Right.
So it's kind of sounds like that's what happened a little bit. He couldn't get a job doing computer software shit. Mm-hmm. So, now between the years of 2001 and 2004, there's literally nothing known about Vince and Anna's life in Canada.
Really?
Nothing.
Well, that's strange.
So, in either October or November of 2004, Vince was hired as a night custodian at Grant Memorial Baptist Church in Winnipeg. His boss, Pastor Tom Castor, said that Vince seemed happy to have a job and was committed to doing it well despite a language barrier with most of the congregation. He said, excuse me, quote, I think he would occasionally feel frustrated and not being able to communicate or understand, but we have very patient staff members and he seemed to respond well. To which I wrote, why the fuck did you not attempt to learn the language?
Right.
You've been here 3 years already.
Yeah, it's time to learn.
You don't know enough English to get by?
Yes. This may come off mean, but like that's my issue with Mexican immigrants coming to this country. Like if you're going to stay here, learn the fucking language.
I
shouldn't have to learn a second language for you.
Well, not just that. You're frustrated over not being able to communicate, but you are the only reason that you are not able to communicate.
Exactly.
You're clearly a smart, educated man.
Right.
And at no point in time.
And I hope I didn't come off like a dick saying that, but that's just my belief.
Well, and at no point in time over the course of the years did he learn enough of the language really to be comfortable.
Right.
So, but in 3 years, his wife learned the language.
Yeah.
She had no issues. Why didn't you learn it with her?
Right.
So I'm just saying, I don't want to come off as crass either, but you cannot get frustrated with something that is your doing
or not doing. Yes.
Like you're the reason that you're frustrated.
It's your mm-hmm. reason.
So the pastor said at this point, too, he showed no signs of anger or quote-unquote trouble. And during his employment at the church, Vince actually converted to Christianity and was baptized.
Oh, wow.
Still did not learn the language.
Nope. Fuck it.
Mm. According to a court psychiatrist testimony later, the psychiatrist's name was Stanley Yaron.
Urine.
Yeah. Vince converted after he heard, quote, the voice of God talking to him.
In what language?
I was just going to say.
What language was he speaking?
You beat me to it. The voice called him, quote, the third story of the Bible and the, quote, second coming of Jesus. I'm going to go with a solid fucking no on that.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a probably not.
The voice also told him that he was destined to save people from an alien invasion.
Yeah. That's probably other voices talking.
In preparation of the invasion, Vince said the voice of God would order him to travel the country on foot or by bus. Anna said he would frequently disappear for days at a time, and he began carrying a large buck knife for protection from alien infiltrators.
Gotta be careful.
Yeah.
Those fucking aliens.
Anna said he would go days without eating or sleeping, and would spend days at home crying and talking about his visions of God. She said that they, her and family members had made several attempts to get Vince to go to the doctor for the auditory hallucinations.
Yeah.
But he repeatedly refused due to fear of hospitals.
So he's got some kind of mental issues going.
Which now people are starting to see.
Yeah.
It's very hard to petition somebody in Canada. It's not even called petitioning.
Harder than
it's
Illinois.
Yeah.
God.
And I mean, yeah, like the health, they have universal health care.
Yeah.
So,
which I'm not all about.
It's very hard.
I'm not all about that.
It's very hard.
A lot of people are, but like our PPO, like I have doctors that like, if I had an HMO, there's no way I'd be able to see them.
No. And universal healthcare, there's no.
Exactly.
So in March of 2005, Vince and Anna separated. He left for Thompson to buy land. But then when he got there, he remembered he didn't have any money. So he ended up working as a maintenance worker at Walmart.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. In the spring of 2005, Vince ended up actually quitting the church. Now in the summer of 2005, he's no longer attending the church. Anna continues to go on her own, and Vince starts working as a forklift driver, at Mainland Foods in Winnipeg.
Okay.
He was also a gas station attendant at Domo and Tim Hortons. Vince would later say it was during this time that he had his first full-blown mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was your first, honey.
No.
No.
I think you've been having them.
Yeah. So in September of 2005, the voices in Vince's head told him to abandon everything and head to Toronto because it was, quote, easier to find work there. He didn't find work there.
No.
So then the voices instructed him to go back to Winnipeg. On foot.
Smart voices.
Yeah. So he left all of his luggage on the side of the road and was eventually found dehydrated and malnourished on Highway 427 by Ontario Provincial Police. He stated that he was, quote, following the sun at the command of God, and he was promptly taken to William Osier Health Center.
Yes.
For an
as he should be.
Now, local newspapers would report that Vince was diagnosed with schizophrenia but refused meds. However, the official records, say the only mention of any mental illness was in relation to an uncle's undiagnosed psychiatric history.
Hmm.
Nothing of his.
Interesting.
However, doctors wanted him to stay. They wanted him to stay for a month, but he checked out AMA. There was no diagnosis given for his stay or why they wanted him
What's
to
AMA
stay.
What's AMA?
Against
on your
medical
own?
Advice.
Oh, okay.
So he was only there for like 4 days. So, but there's nothing, there's no diagnosis or anything.
Diagnosis.
Yeah. He asked Anna to book him a flight to Ding Dong.
Ding Dong?
Dan Dong.
Oh, Dan. That's still amazing.
It's
Dan's
great.
Dong.
Yeah. His parents.
Sorry, people in China. I'm sorry.
Immediately noticed a change in his personality, but couldn't quite put their finger on it. Now, Vince was able to find work easily because, again, this is where his degree is. Yeah. So he can find actual, like, work legitimate, related yeah. to his degree.
Right.
Not to say that the work he was doing in Canada was not legitimate. It was just not what he went to school for, you know? So he could not, however, keep work due to bouts of sudden irritability. So his father would say that he could only maintain employment for a couple days at the most. In an attempt to reconcile, Anna went back to China, but quickly discovered, that his mental health had only worsened in their separation. Now, depending on the sources, Vince and Anna got divorced in China.
Okay.
But they still were together, essentially.
Yeah.
Right. They ended up going back to Canada. Anna went back to Winnipeg, and Vince went back to Toronto, still unemployed and unable to find work. Mm-hmm. He would regularly call Anna to whine and ask for money.
Well, yeah. You know.
She eventually just told him to come live with her in Winnipeg. Okay. So that's what he did. Now, according to Wikipedia, he got his Canadian citizenship in November of 2006. But according to CBC, which is a Canadian news outlet, he got his citizenship at some point in 2007.
Oh.
Now, it's questioned how he got it because in order to gain citizenship, you have to live and work in Canada for 3 years without incident. It has to be 3 consecutive years. So
yeah.
I don't know if they went back to when he first got there because he did leave.
Yeah.
He did go to China for a little bit, so it was interrupted, but I don't know.
Interesting.
In 2006, he abruptly left again for Edmonton. He, again, could not find a job and lived in his car. Anna continued to send him money, and he eventually got a 300-square-foot basement apartment. Now, in July...
Man, that's small.
Yeah, July of 2007, Anna moved to Edmonton with him. And then they upgraded to a larger apartment on the 16th floor of a building just a couple blocks over.
Yeah.
Anna said at this point, he seemed pretty okay.
Stable.
Yeah. In July of 2007 through April of 2008, he works for Edmonton Distribution Company delivering newspapers.
Yeah. It's a job.
Right. And for between January and June of 2008, he works at Clearview Mall Walmart in Edmonton. Where he was a janitor, a mechanic, and later a cashier.
Hey, it's a job. It's making money.
Yeah. So he mostly kept to himself. in June of 2008, though, his mental health reportedly deteriorated rapidly.
Oh, boy.
He again flew back to China out of nowhere, but only stayed for a day.
What? Yeah,
after telling his father that he came to, quote, find a wife. When he got back to Canada, he was terminated from Walmart after a disagreement with a coworker. Now, in July of 2008...
How do you get fired on your day off?
I know, right? July of 2008, he goes back to delivering newspapers. His boss describes him as reliable and hardworking, frustrated with the language barrier, again.
Dude, but that's also, on you.
Yep, showed no signs of trouble. Now, Anna would say that during this time, Vince was happy for the first time since his hallucinations began. So it's kind of a big thing.
Yeah, that's huge.
Just before July 24th, Vince asked his boss at the delivery company for time off to go to Winnipeg for a job interview. But no such job interview existed.
Oh. In his head.
Yeah, July 24th, Vince left his Edmonton home again with no warning. Left a note for Anna that said, quote, "Don't look for me. I wish you were happy."
Oh, boy.
Now, Anna's not fazed by this at all.
Yeah,
she's like, this fucker leaves all the time.
I'm fucking used to it.
Right. He's either going to come back or he's going to call me for fucking money.
You're like, right.
Yeah. Well, on July 26, 2008, he called Anna to clarify that he definitely was not coming back.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now... July 28th of 2008, Vince spent the morning delivering newspapers. Now, around midnight, he boards a Greyhound bus in Edmonton bound for Winnipeg. On July 29th, 2008, at approximately 6 p.m., Vince got off the bus in Erickson, Manitoba.
Yeah.
He got off the bus with at least three pieces of luggage, and he stayed on a bench next to an M&M grocery store. Witnesses stated that Vince was seen sitting, quote, bolt upright with his eyes wide open at 3 a.m.
Yeesh.
Manson lamps.
Yeah. Something is wrong.
Yeah. Now, on July 30th, 2008, Darren Beatty, a 15-year-old riding by on his bike, sees Vince holding a handwritten sign advertising his laptop for sale for $600. This 15-year-old was able to talk him down to 60 and got the computer bag thrown in for free.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So Vince ends up spending the rest of the afternoon in an alley behind the grocery store.
Oh, jeez.
Now, later on, the RCMP, which is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, were able to obtain the computer from this 15-year-old, who's now out $60 and a computer.
Yeah, like, no shit.
The fuck?
Right?
They found 20 individual resumes for jobs at convenience stores, fast food restaurants, IT departments, and even one to the RCMP itself.
You need a resume for fast food places?
I don't think you do, but he had them. He was very prepared.
That is being prepared.
Yeah. Do you think they were scented?
Yes.
Legally Blonde. It gives it a nice touch.
Yes. Scented.
So he...
Velvet.
He applied for the RCMP. Although it's unknown what position he applied for. There were also random pictures, which stupid fucking pictures that everybody has on their goddamn phone or computer. Like a fucking parade and a helicopter and like stupid bullshit. Yeah.
Right. I have one of me in uniform holding a dildo.
The pink one?
The pink one.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I also have that picture on my phone. Yes. I can think of about seven other people that probably have that picture on their phone also.
I was doing a traffic stop and a search, and
That was one of the first text messages I got from your old partner. He was like, look at this bullshit. And I'm like, oh, God.
Thank God I had gloves on.
Oh, amazing.
Can you imagine where that thing's been?
But the look on your faces, like yours and his.
Oh, because we thought we were going to find drugs.
And that is not a drug.
Because the chick was so fucking nervous. And then we found out why. She had a bunch of sex toys.
Listen, okay. That is the perfect way to get away with a fucking crime.
It is. Okay?
So there's another.
It is.
There was another town where a call was had. And an officer was speaking about it later and said that there was a very large rainbow-colored dildo at the end of the bed. And I said, if you think I would not have put that shit on and fucking helicoptered just so my buddies could get the fuck out the back door with drugs, you are sadly mistaken.
Yeah.
Because you know you fucks were either looking at the ceiling or looking at that fucking dildo.
Put it on top of the fucking drugs and... Dude.
I would have just shook
it. We'll be fascinated with that.
I would have just shook it at the fucking cops when my buddy's running out the back door.
Right.
Nothing to be embarrassed about, right. Baby. That's how you get away with it.
That's how you get away.
They are 12-year-old boys in cars with lights.
We are. We totally are.
There's no other way around it.
No, we 100%
are. I would have been like, officer, and then fucking helicoptered it and tried to slap him with it. Okay, so now, pass the rainbow dildo. So at 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. that evening, Vince boards the Greyhound bus with Tim McLean and 35 other passengers. He is described as a tall man in his 40s with a shaved head and sunglasses, sat at the front of the bus. Switch notebooks.
Oh shit.
Fellow passengers would later describe Vince as agitated and somewhat confused, but settled quietly at the front. This is how I would probably appear boarding a bus by myself.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
So at 7 o'clock, the bus makes an extended stop in Brandon, where the passengers got out, ate, smoked, you know. At 7:30...
I need a vape.
I fucking hate you. The passengers boarded the bus... Return of Zorro was on the TV.
Oh, yeah.
Tim goes back to his seat, puts on his headphones, and leans against the window, ready to go back to sleep. According to his mother, there was only about an hour left of this entire trip for Tim.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So Vince takes his seat up front, but shortly after departing, he moves to sit next to Tim. Tim gives a courtesy acknowledgement, but goes back to sleep. At 8:30, when the bus is 10 kilometers, I did not convert to miles, from Portage La Prairie, passengers are startled by a blood-curdling scream.
Oh, jeez.
One of those passengers, was Cody Olmstead. He was interviewed by the dumbest fucking reporter known to man. I'll just say it now. After the entire interview, when this poor guy goes through telling everything, the reporter goes, "So have you ever seen anything like this?"
Yeah, every fucking day, brother.
Excuse me, what?
Yeah. I just saw it yesterday, dude.
I've been in EMS for 20 years, and I've only seen it like twice.
Right.
So I'm going to go with good old Cody. Probably never seen it before. Just saying.
Right.
Poor guy. He's like, yeah, that's about when I threw up. Yeah, right. I'm sure.
That'll happen.
So many passengers would go on to say that, like, it's obviously this horrific thing that they're witnessing, but, like, you can't look away.
Yeah.
It's like a car accident or, like, naked people.
Yeah. Or
you don't
just
want to look.
Or just when the police have their fucking lights on. Everyone has to stop, slow down, and look.
This catastrophic thing is happening in front of you, and you don't want to watch, but you can't not.
Right.
So.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get it.
Man, this Bud Light seltzer.
Good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't taste good.
That's great, because you're not fucking drinking it. So, Cody would say that he initially thought it was a fist fight. He looked in the back and saw the, quote, big guy pinning the little guy against the bathroom door and the seat. He then saw blood and realized that Vince had a huge fucking knife.
Oh, jeez, that fucking butcher knife.
While some passengers describe this as a, quote, frenzied attack, Corey said Vince acted, quote, like he was a robot and seemed to be, quote, calmly killing the guy.
Oh, my God.
Like, methodically. Just
yeah. Something's wrong with him.
Cody ran up to the driver screaming to stop that someone was getting stabbed. Tim, at this point, was essentially blocked in by Vince. He was in a window seat, you know. Dude's like 200 pounds. Tim is not.
Yeah.
So the initial stabs were to Tim's neck and chest. And what can only be described as adrenaline had Tim jumping over Vince into the aisle.
Oh, it had to have been, because those are fatal fucking wounds.
The driver got the bus pulled over and ushered all of the passengers off. Most of them didn't really have a clue what was happening. They knew there was a fight, but they didn't know the extent of it because they were all looking forward and then just ushered off the bus. Now, a following bus pulled over when he saw everybody piling out of the stopped bus. And then a long-haul semi-truck driver also pulled over. Because you see all these people being ushered off a bus at the...
You wonder what the fuck is going on.
People are, like, throwing up, and it's, like, a big to-do. So the truck driver, obviously sensing that something was wrong, grabbed multiple crowbars from his truck.
There you go.
Attaboy.
He reminds me of the tow truck driver in Adventures in Babysitting.
Oh, yeah.
With the hook.
See, I think of Large Marge.
Large Marge,
like, that's
too.
What I think.
Yeah.
Like, I could see Large Marge grabbing some fucking crowbars and being like, let's go, bitch.
Right.
Like, that's what I see.
Yeah. I could see that too.
So, the tow truck driver, the second bus driver, and a passenger by the name of Garnet Caden, entered the bus.
Wow.
With the crowbars from the truck driver.
Yeah.
Now, these guys felt fucking terrible because they, what do you do? What do you do? So, Garrett would eventually say, quote, we saw the guy was over on top of him and he was clearly cutting the guy's head off and gutting him.
Oh my God.
So they went into the bus to see, like, could they help him? What was going on? Like, they didn't have a fucking clue what was going on.
Yeah.
So, like, that was his quote in the interview with a reporter.
Oh, jeez.
So then Vince starts walking towards them, yelling at the bus driver to shut the door. The men retreated, which you should have, gentlemen. Don't ever fucking feel bad about that.
Right, right.
While Vince started slashing at them. So they ran around to kind of the back of the bus, and then they came back to the front to see if he had gotten off. Well, he had not. Vince had not gotten off, but the door was still open. So these guys took the crowbars and barricaded the door shut so he couldn't get out.
Good.
Because obviously you don't fucking want him out.
Yeah.
In response, trigger warning, Vince calmly lifted one arm holding the knife and the other arm holding Tim's head.
Oh my God.
He then dropped the head, but subsequently picked it up and started shaking it in the window at the other passengers before dropping it into the stairwell.
Jesus.
Yeah. That's when poor Garrett was like, that's about when I threw up.
Yeah.
And I think the other guy did too.
Mm-hmm.
I will rub your back, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, fuck.
Yep.
So immediately after the attack started, the RCMP received a call about the stabbing. When they arrived, Vince was still on the bus and was told by other passengers that he had attempted to flee by driving away in the bus, but the bus driver had engaged the emergency immobilizer system, making the bus inoperable.
Mm, smart thinking. Like,
thinking on your feet.
Yeah. Smart.
My question is, why didn't they shoot him? And I don't know if it's like a policy thing, but this went on for between 4.5 and 6 more hours. So, like I said, this went on for the next 4.5 to 6-ish hours.
Damn.
Raise
your mic up a little bit. It fell down. There you go.
Vince remained barricaded in the bus and began just defiling Tim's body. There is audio of the police on the scene trying to describe it to people who aren't on the scene.
Oh, really?
And it's like
disturbing.
They are just puckered. Like, they don't even know how to explain it. Like, you're taught how to talk on a radio.
Yeah. Right?
And these poor guys are just like stumbling over themselves, trying to properly say it.
Get off the radio and shoot him.
No, right. Knowing that people are probably listening. They're like,
so many police officers get caught up on trying to talk on the radio.
It's different in Canada, though. I don't think that.
It's not, though. People get, cops get caught up on the radio trying to describe what's happening. Focus on what is happening in front of you and then give.
I don't think they could shoot. There had to have been something there. But seeing that, like, that's something you've never seen before.
Yeah, I mean, if that happened here, you shoot them.
So they...
You'd shoot them in an instant.
Especially because... So he now is just defiling Tim's body. He's cutting out organs.
Oh, my God.
And
come on.
Placing them in what they call plastic garbage bags, to what us Midwesterners are, jewel bags.
Jewels.
Yeah. He was cutting off chunks of flesh and eating it.
Yeah. You shoot him.
He was licking the blood from his hands and the knife.
Oh my God.
And it's said that he ate both of his eyeballs and a third of his heart muscle. Now,
something is wrong with this guy.
Vince denies this, but those are the only parts of Tim that were not found.
Mm.
So, and like I said, this went on for the next 4.5 to 6 hours.
There's no way. You'd fucking shoot him and call it a day.
So at about 9 o'clock, special negotiators and the tactical unit arrived.
Why?
I know. And Vince was Vince was heard saying, quote, I have to stay on this bus forever. He then took the body parts that he had put in the jewel bags and threw them on the dashboard. He would inevitably...
Oh, my God, Canada, what is with you in your police?
He would inevitably remove all of Tim's organs.
Yeah, I'm baffled. Yeah. Canada, if you could explain to me what is up with your police, like, if this is policy or what the hell?
Yeah. Now at 1:38 a.m. on July 31st, Vince attempted to escape the bus by breaking through a window. He broke the window, threw out the knife and a pair of scissors, and was then apprehended by the tactical unit of RCMP. He was tased twice, then handcuffed and put in a squad car.
Should have been shot. Just
while
my opinion.
Searching Vince, they found Tim's ears, nose, and tongue in Vince's pocket.
Jesus.
In my notes. Why didn't they fucking shoot him?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And
Canada,
you know,
I would love
to
know.
You know, if they would have shot him, they would have been fucking dragged over the fucking coals.
Oh, I'm sure they would have.
For a mentally ill guy. But.
Yeah, because he's mentally ill. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely sure of it, but...
And my guess is
you have seconds to think about what you're doing.
Right.
The dude is fucking cutting organs out.
Now
you shoot and kill him.
I guarantee this will be the argument. Tim was dead. There was no helping him. There was no fixing him.
Yeah.
And at this point, Vince was barricaded on the bus with nobody else but himself. He could only hurt himself at this point. Because if he would have tried to exit the bus, they would have got him before.
Yeah.
So, devil's advocate, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I get it.
So, now by this time, traumatized passengers had been taken to the Brandon RCMP detachment for questioning. By 10 a.m., they had been taken to Walmart for new clothes, and they were eventually transported to Winnipeg by 3:30.
Thank God for Walmart.
I know, right?
In 24 hours.
Now,
right on.
Tim's mom had heard about the event on the news the Wednesday, July 30th. She was working at a home, I believe, an assisted living home. And when they, you know, she cooked dinner, and when they sat down for dinner, they said a prayer for the person involved in their family.
Oh, my God.
She did not know until the following day at 7 p.m. That it was Tim.
Oh,
and only
God.
Found out when Tim's dad called her and was like, hey, have you heard about this? And she's like, are you fucking kidding me? Everybody's heard about this. And he's like, yeah, it was Tim.
Oh, my God. How fucking terrible.
Yeah. So, on August 5th of 2008, Vince appeared in court briefly at the Portage La Prairie Courthouse, where he was charged with second-degree murder. Someone fucking explain that to me, because I could not find it.
What?
Yes. The only thing he said was to the judge, quote, please kill me. He refused legal help and was ordered to undergo a psychiatric assessment. So now, a side note, piece of shit, people, side note.
Mm-hmm.
Shirley Phelps Roper, who is the daughter of the founder of the Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, fuck
said
you.
She and several church members will be attending Tim's funeral on August 9th.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
The things that this woman fucking said. Mm. How you say you are a fucking woman of God is beyond me.
Oh, that whole fucking
now,
church.
I,
fuck you guys. And I have no shame in saying that.
Religion
fuck
is
you
like
guys.
A it's a it thing. You know, like I feel like religion is ruining God.
Yeah. I believe that too.
So what the fuck these people have to do with anybody in Canada, seeing as they're based out of Topeka, Kansas.
Right.
They were described in a British documentary as, quote, the most hated family in America.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to read some quotes.
Oh, jeez.
And I wanted to make my notebook a motherfucking frisbee. Okay?
Oh, my God.
She said, quote, God handed us a gift. They were going to protest against Tim's, quote, filthy way of life, which was emblematic of Canada's moral decay. Quote.
Fuck
oh, it gets,
you.
It gets better. Quote. His death was supremely unemotional. You got God shaking in rage. There is no emotional component. He was a rebel against God. He was taught to be a rebel by his parents. He came from a rebel country. They brought this wrath upon his head. And it sucks to be him, and it sucks to be them. Wait. Quote, here's what I know. He is dead, and God does not do that to people that serve in his truth. She went on to say that he had nothing going on in his life, and that, quote, his life was all about him. blah, blah, blah.
Dude, I don't even, I'm just going to shut up because it's not going to be nice. I'm just going to shut up.
I couldn't not.
Yeah, I get it.
Who? What?
Them.
What?
Them. Man,
what the fuck do you care about what's happening in fucking Canada?
Right.
Go back to Kansas.
Because they got to fucking have their 15 minutes of fucking fame.
How? It is not very often that I am speechless.
Right.
It is less often that I am tipsy and speechless.
Right.
And I don't have a fucking thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to say to that. Okay. So during the psychiatric assessment, Vince was diagnosed with schizophrenia. Shocking. Said he heard the voice of God and that the divine voice told him he needed to kill the person sitting next to him or he would die. Psychiatrist Stanley Yaron stated Vince's schizophrenia rendered him inculpable, that he was under the false belief that Tim was, quote, a force of evil and posed an imminent threat to himself and others. Tim was a demon in disguise, an alien who needed to be, quote, destroyed, which is why Vince felt he had to mutilate Tim's body to prevent him from coming back to life.
Wow. Wow. He is gone.
Yeah.
He needs help.
So now...
I'm sorry, but he is mentally ill.
I don't believe... This is one of those that I, like... Obviously, there's a lot of times where I'm like, people blame mental illness and people are just evil.
Yeah.
This man is
he's beyond.
He is in need of serious help.
Yeah.
He legitimately was...
Mentally ill.
Yeah. Legitimately.
Yeah.
I
agree 100 times over.
And like I told you, I heard that audio of what it sounds like in a schizophrenic brain.
Yeah.
And I just got goosebumps. I
can't even listen because I've heard it before.
I
when I've, you know, the medication mm-hmm, that makes me delirious and
this guy, I legitimately think he's got legitimate.
I've heard it before. Yeah. So I know one, and I just got chills thinking about my past.
So in March of 2009, the trial began. Both the prosecution and the defense were in agreement with Yaron's assessment and diagnosis. They were both in favor of involuntary commitment to a mental institution rather than prison time, which that's what he needs.
But that's what he needs, right. But for a very, very long time.
Not what happened.
Oh, God, come on.
You don't know the end of this?
No.
Oh, well, hold on to your butthole, babe.
Oh, Jesus.
The presiding judge, John Scherfield, accepted the diagnosis and recommendation of mental institution. Vince was subsequently found not criminally responsible for the murder on account of mental illness.
The dog is drinking.
Yeah. he was committed to Selkirk Mental Health Center. Okay. Now, Tim's family was obviously like, well, what the fuck?
Right.
Because they don't care if he's mentally ill.
Right.
They literally, I mean, he chopped up her child.
Yeah. He fucking killed him.
I wouldn't care either.
I wouldn't. So, I would give two shits.
She said, quote, Lee still did it. Whether he was in his right frame of mind or not, he still did the act. There was nobody else on that bus holding a knife, slicing up my child.
Right.
So he goes to Selkirk Mental Health Center, which is, it's a maximum security mental health facility.
Okay.
Or as advertised.
Yeah. Right.
After a year, Vince was allowed to take supervised walks on the grounds with two staff members. Okay.
By 2012,
he was granted increased freedom to have excursions into the community of Selkirk. What?
Yeah.
They started off at 30 minutes, but then increased to day passes with one staff member and security guard.
No, I'm not cool now, with that.
Do you have to tell the citizens of that community like you would have to tell them about a sex offender? I feel like you
should. I would think so.
It's not like it's somebody with a non-violent past with a new diagnosis of schizophrenia.
Yeah.
This man has a very violent past of murder and dismemberment and cannibalism.
I mean, when we would do sex offender registration and put the little flag on the door.
God, that was my favorite.
Yeah. We would do it for violent offenders too, mm-hmm. who had to register. If you were a violent offender and out on parole, you had to...
Really?
You had to register.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh.
So we would put the flag on their door as well.
I feel like if he's going out, I mean...
If we did it, our little shit town, Canada should be doing it.
By 2013, he was granted supervised full-day trips to Lockport, Winnipeg, and nearby beaches.
That's bullshit.
He was also allowed to be unescorted on hospital grounds.
I'm furious at this.
Started at 15 minutes to full day. Now, he has an escort. He's medicated.
So what?
I know. I'm trying. It's very hard. But it does not get any better. So in early 2014, he was allowed to visit Selkirk unescorted and was then moved to an unlocked hospital ward. Now I have a fucking problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you not tell the town about that?
Big time.
By 2015, experts recommended a transfer to a Winnipeg hospital to prepare for a group home setting.
Oh, my God.
His psychiatrist and other doctors recommended unescorted visits to Winnipeg.
No. No.
Now, the Manitoba Criminal Code Review Board granted the visits, but said that he had to remain inpatient at either Selkirk or a Winnipeg psychiatric center.
I'm so fucking furious at this point. Like,
yeah. Now, according to a 1999 Supreme Court of Canada ruling, a review board must order an absolute discharge if a person doesn't pose a significant threat to public safety. He was allowed to change his name. He changed his name to Will Lee Baker. Did you look in the English dictionary for the most common motherfucking names you could find?
Yeah,
and
right?
Picked all of them.
Right.
Sir, you don't speak English. You are not Will Baker.
No. No. You're a little dick, but...
In 2016, he was allowed to move to independent living. But he had to abide by certain rules.
What?
Which he had to... he had to take his meds and continue counseling appointments. Yeah.
Oh, good for him. What?
Mm-hmm.
What in the fuck, babe?
It gets worse.
How can it?
In 2017, Vince Lee was granted an absolute discharge.
Oh, my God.
The board found he no longer posed a significant safety threat. The board decision said public safety was its paramount consideration and that the evidence did not substantiate that Vince Lee posed a, quote, significant threat to the safety of the public. Might I remind you, he decapitated and ate a man in front of people.
If I was Tim's family, I would be so fucking outraged.
She still fights. That day, she could not even comment. She was basically like,
I wouldn't be able to either.
I'm going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame her 100%.
So the board's decision-making
process
sparked huge controversy, obviously, with Manitoba's legislative justice critic noting its secrecy around releasing information about Vince Lee brought the justice system into disrepute. So they hid shit.
Yeah.
They didn't release anything. And the board said that the health issues would remain private because it's his right. What?
Wow.
What?
Wow.
To which his mother said, how is it his right? Why is he being treated as a patient and not a criminal?
Yeah.
Because if he was being treated as the criminal that he was, I understand he had mental health issues at the time, his health history would not be a secret.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to prisoners... there is really no HIPAA.
Yeah, HIPAA doesn't apply.
Yeah. So.
Or it shouldn't.
As of now, he is living somewhere.
Oh my God, stop. You just fucking ruined my night.
They don't know where he's at. They don't know what he's doing. Because with absolute discharge, you don't check in with people. So you're releasing this man.
So you're not even on
parole. Based on his word that he is going to take his medication that made him essentially stable.
So he could do it all over again.
So prior to this, he refused hospitalization. He refused doctors. He refused medications.
So why is he going to take his medication now?
You force-fed him his meds while he was there.
Yeah.
There's nothing making him take it now.
Oh, babe, I'm so fucking upset.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now, Tim's girlfriend, Colleen, ended up having the baby.
Yeah.
A couple months after he was
poor
killed.
Girl.
Well, his mom took custody of the baby.
Oh, really?
Colleen gave the baby to his mom.
Oh.
Now, Tim's mom has had his son for years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mom wants him back. So poor Tim's mom is now fighting to keep her grandson that she's had for the last.
Oh, geez. Why does mom want him back?
Because she thinks she can handle it now.
You've been through so much.
Don't rip that baby away.
No.
Don't rip that baby away.
Because that's who's going to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who's going to suffer.
So now passengers. They have
PTSD.
Oh God. The truck driver, his name was Tim Aguilar.
Yeah.
He was the one who tried to stop and help. He has been diagnosed with PTSD and has, admitted to turning to alcohol to dull the pain.
Oh my God. Poor guy.
There it was a couple that was on the bus that they can't keep jobs. They can't stay employed.
Jesus.
And one of the first responding officers committed suicide within 2 years.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So people were just, it was awful.
Oh, I just got chills.
I did too. Now,
I just got chills.
At the time, Greyhound was running an ad, which they very quickly pulled because the headline was, "You've never seen bus rage."
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, I just got chills.
So multiple lawsuits have been filed. Greyhound has actually, they settled out of court with a lot of them. There are still some, there's still a lot of lawsuits kind of, not out there, but like you don't
pending.
Hear about, you're not hearing a lot about it. People were kind of waiting a little while because, I mean, the effects weren't hitting them right away.
Right. As it doesn't.
So...
It really doesn't. PTSD can come, mine came, 2 years after my shooting?
A long time.
Yeah.
So, it's just, I mean, it's fucking terrible.
It is. What the fuck? What a terrible fucking story you gave.
Yeah, I know.
I'm left off pissed off, fucking angry.
There's
nothing good to say about it.
One of the attorneys that was on the board said, quote, "I think that we have to be respectful of people who disagree with the decision on that basis, but recognize that we've made a decision as a civilized country that we don't punish people who really didn't know what they were doing at the time of the offense and really didn't know that they were doing something wrong."
I totally get that.
Yes, when you rob a store.
Yes, but he should not be out now. He needs help.
He decapitated a man and shook his head.
Yeah, and ate him.
In front of people.
Fucking ate him, babe.
He put his nose in his pocket.
He needs constant help. He needs to be on medication nonstop. I don't doubt one second that he has mental illness.
Oh God, no.
You know,
but
he needs to be in. He cannot be out.
Because here's the thing now, too. Now, prior to being hospitalized, Did he know something was wrong with him? It's possible that he didn't. He's a very smart, educated man, but that does not mean that he was educated about mental illness.
Right.
That doesn't mean that he knew something was wrong with him.
Right.
Now, you have been hospitalized. You've been medicated. You now know the difference between being medicated and unmedicated.
100%.
Right? He now knows that something is wrong with him.
I know it. When I don't take my medicine, I know 100%. But holy fuck, I'm not right.
Why are we taking this man's word? Oh, yeah, I'll take my meds. Oh, okay.
You don't do that. You don't do that.
So where is he?
What a fucked up story.
Yep.
Well, thank you for doing this because it did interest the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
But I'm left angry.
Yeah.
Unsatisfied.
Yeah. And there is no, there's no good outcome to this.
There isn't none. Either.
I mean, his mom is still fighting for custody of her grandson.
I pray for them. I'm sorry you didn't get the closure that you needed. I can't imagine
being his mother.
No fucking way. I'd be in jail.
Because I would find him.
I'd find him.
If he can go.
It would be my life's work to find him.
If he can go unescorted, guess what?
Yes.
So the fuck
I can too.
And you know
I was
what?
Nuts.
Since Canada allows it, the voices in my head told me to fucking do it.
Exactly.
Yep.
You're exactly fucking right.
And then the amount of defense that they put into their decision.
Yeah.
Who are you justifying it to? Me or you?
Right.
Because clearly you're not okay with your decision.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, guys,
sorry, guys, that was a shitty one.
Yeah, this was a downer for sure. Yeah. But I hope you enjoyed it. Chance is definitely done.
Do we tell them what our Patreon is?
Yes. Our Patreon is our next episode.
I'm going to say it right now, guys. It's a two-parter. It's going to be a two-parter.
It's going to be a two-parter, but who is it going to be?
Princess Diana.
Boom. Boom. Princess Diana.
I'm calling it now, and it's going to be a long two-parter.
So
buckle up.
Yeah. So if you want all access, ad-free, go to www.patreon.com/deathdoaspart, number one, not O-meters. Like we always say. But it is going to be a phenomenal two-part episode.
All right, we get it.
Yeah, can you calm him down?
I'm trying.
Settle his ass down.
Come on. Enough. Chance says hi, everybody.
He says hi, everyone.
Yeah.
Please, whatever platform you listen to us on, give us a rating, a 5-star rating if you like us so much. Please tell your friends, family, and whoever else that may be into true crime.
And wrap it up there, Beatbox, because he's going nuts.
We will be talking to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.